If I would ask you, what was the greatest thing that Moshe Rabbeinu ever did in the course of his career, which was obviously we're talking about the most unusual and holy person that ever walked the face of this earth. So I know what you would say. There are those who would say, well, he took the Jewish people out of Egypt. That was quite a... He was God's messenger to take a people from slavery to freedom, from darkness to light, from pain to triumph and greatness. Then, of course, there are those who are going to say, what are you talking about? Most important thing is the fact that he gave Torah to the Jewish people. He was the great teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu. 40 years he taught Torah, he brought it from God to the Jewish people. This is something that lasts for all of history, for all time. He was the great lawgiver, the great leader. So I just want to introduce you to a Rashi. And it's good to know this Rashi because it puts you in a class by yourself. Most people don't know the Rashi. And the reason why they don't know the Rashi is because it's the very last Rashi in all of Chumash. Whoever gets there. And if it's Simchas Torah, then you know already Simchas Torah is just a recycled Purim, and you don't get to the end of Parshas El Sabracha. But here is, number one, you have the very last pasuk that appears in all of Torah. It talks about the death of Moshe, ul'chol hayod ha'chazaka, and to the great strength of his hand, ul'chol ha'mora ha'gadol, the fearsome and awesome things that he did, asher osa Moshe, that Moshe did, le'enei kol Yisrael, the eyes of all of Israel, chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek, it's the end of Torah. What were the great things that Moshe did before the eyes of all of the people? So Rashi says, ul'chol hayod ha'chazaka, what was the mighty hand of Moshe? Shekibel es ha'torah baluchot b'yadav. He received the tablets, Torah, that was on the tablets. He received them with his hand. Ul'chol ha'mora ha'godol, and all of the awesome, frightening things that he did. Nisim u'gros, shebamidbar ha'godol v'hanora, the miracles and the manifestations of great strength that he did in the desert, the great and fearsome desert. La'enei kol Yisrael. Last Rashi. In the eyes of all of Israel. What was it that Moshe Rabbeinu did in the eyes of Israel? Shenesau libo, that his heart moved him. Lishbor haluchot lifnehem. To break the luchot in their presence. Shenema, as it says, v'ashabreim, and I broke them le'einechem, before your very eyes. V'hiskima da'at HaKadosh Baruch Hu le'da'ato, and the end was that God agreed with him. God's opinion was, you are right. Shenana, because it says, I will give you another set of luchot in place of the ones asher shibarta, that you broke. Yiyasher kochacha sheshibarta. God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, shkayach, well done that you broke the luchos. End of Torah. Last Rashi. I would say this is quite a little bit of a surprise. I don't think any one of us would have come up with this idea that the greatest thing he ever did was that he broke the luchot. But that's what Rashi says. That's how Rashi interprets the very last pasuk in Torah. He broke them. He shattered them. We're going to move in a direction maybe that will be a little bit different than Rashi, but it's quite clear from Rashi that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos as a calculated act. When we read the psukim, we may be left with the impression that this was something that happened spontaneously. He was angry, and we'll see the crucial pasuk. He comes down and he sees Jews dancing around the Egel. He gets angry and he smashes the luchos. That's not the picture we get in Rashi. In Rashi, we get the picture that Nisa'olibo, his heart moved him to shatter the luchos. It wasn't something just, he was overwhelmed by anger, and he couldn't control himself, and he just took those luchos and he broke them. It's not what Rashi is saying. All right, maybe we'll understand it a little better as we continue through what it is that we have to say today. And first, we have to begin with the basic text here in Parashat Ki Tisa. Vayifen Vayered Moshe Ben Ahar, number 2. He turned. God has told him up on the mountain, Lech Reid, go down, because your people have acted sinfully. They've made unto themselves a golden calf, a god. Vayifen Vayered Moshe Ben Ahar. Moshe turned and he came down from the mountain, Ushnei Luchot Ha'edud Biyado, and the 2 tablets of the testimony in his hand, Luchot Ksuvim Mishnei Evreihem. Luchot, the writing was on both sides, Mizeh u'Mizeh Heim Ktuvim, written on both sides, and you can, even though it was engraved from one side through the other, it was some kind of a miracle that you were able to read both sides. V'haluchot ma'aseh Elokim Heim, on the luchot were something done by God. V'hamichtav Michtav Elokim, the writing was the writing of God. Chu charut al haluchot, it was engraved on the luchot. Vayishma Yehoshua et kol ha'am. Yehoshua had been waiting outside the camp, and Yehoshua heard the sounds that were coming from the camp. And he heard the sounds of the people Berei'o in their evil. Vayomer el Moshe, and he said to Moshe, kol milchoma b'machane, it sounds like the sounds of war in the camp. Vayomer el Moshe said, ein kol anod givurah, this is not the sound of might, and it's not the sound of chalusha, of weakness. There's something just, it's noise. It seems purposeless. It's just a sound, and it doesn't sound good. It doesn't augur well. Number 19, that's the pasuk. That's the pasuk we're going to deal with. Because the pasuk is so crucial, I have it in number 7, in larger print, and we're going to have to refer to that a number of times. Vayihi kasher karav al ha'machane, and it came to pass as Moshe came close to the camp, vayaret ha'egel u'mecholot, he saw the egel and the dancing around the egel. Vayichar af Moshe, and Moshe got angry, vayashlech miyadav et aluchot, and he cast down the luchot from his hand, vayishaber otam, and he broke them tachat ha'har, under the mountain, bottom of the mountain. All right? Rashi, that last Rashi in Chumash, is obviously interpreting it that yes, he was angry. Most probably Rashi is saying something very nice, that Moshe Rabbeinu is not acting out of anger, even though you may be left with the impression that this is in a fit of anger. No, he's angry about what they're doing. But his breaking the luchos is calculated. Calculated. Threw it down, and he broke it under the mountain. What did Aaron say in verse 2? Oh, you're not fair. You're cheating. You have a whole chumash in front of you. You don't have just the sections that I've taken out. Yes, you're on editing. What does Aaron say in... So that Aaron also is yeah, al yichar af Adoni, let not my master be angry. In other words, so it would seem from the psukim that anger plays a significant role over here. But remember, Rashi didn't say that. Okay, so we'll have to understand Rashi. There's a great deal more that we have to understand over here. I have a lot of problems over here. We're going to look at the second half of number 2 later. We're going to come back to it. We're going to go to number 3. Number 3 is in Parashat Ekev. Remember, in Sefer Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu retells the story of the 40 years in the desert. And there are 2 incidents that are very prominent. The sin of the spies, and the chet ha'egel, the sin of the golden calf. And he says the following. Now he's saying it in first person. Vo'efen ve'eded min ahor, and I turned and I went down from the mountain. Vo'ahor bo'er be'ish, and the mountain is burning in fire. Ushnei luchot habrit al shtei yadai, and the two tablets of the covenant on my two hands. Vo'eira, and then I saw. V'hinei chatosim l'Hashem l'kechem, you sinned before God your God. Asitim lachem egel masecho, you made unto yourself a form of an egel, of a calf. Sartem ahed min haderech, you've turned quickly from the path. Asher tzivu Hashem etchem, that God commanded you. V'et post b'shnei aluchot, and I grabbed hold of the two luchot. V'ashlichem mi'al shtei yadai, and I cast them down from upon my two hands, for ashabreim, and I broke them le'einechem, before your very eyes. I'm going to save the next section over here also. The shiur is going to be devoted to a number of comments that are made by Nechama Leibowitz. Alar Shalom. I should have written by number 5. Number 5 is taken from Nechama Leibowitz. And I remember I'd first come upon this or felt this way, and it was a few weeks before she died, and I wanted to discuss it with her, but she died. Let's see what she says. She says this problem of the breaking of the luchos is a very serious problem. Now, there's one question that she doesn't ask, for that matter. I haven't even seen any of the Mephoroshim who asked this question. But it always bothered me, and I think we're going to resolve it today. Who gave Moshe the right to break the luchos? Who gave him the right? It belongs to you. They're yours. God has given him the luchos to bring to the Jewish people. What's the responsibility of somebody who's given something for safekeeping in order to deliver to somebody else? You dare not touch it. What do you mean you break it? So then, of course, if we're going to say that he was simply overwhelmed with anger, so all right, so what can you do? He was overwhelmed with anger. It was not an act of that was thought out. That's not what Rashi said. Rashi says this was calculated. Calculated. And by the way, from that pasuk that we just learned, and that's the one that Rashi quotes, I broke them before your very eyes, leaves the impression that he wanted to do. He wanted. It was a matter of choice. And that's how Rashi explains the last pasuk in Chumash, La'enei kol Yisrael, that which he did in the eyes of all of Israel. Who gave him the right to break the luchos? It's not his. I can't for the life of me believe that Moshe Rabbeinu would do something that he's not permitted to do. To push it, it's an aveda. You take something that doesn't belong to you. It's one of two things. Either it belongs to God, or it belongs to the Jewish people. It certainly doesn't belong to him. And therefore he has absolutely no right. So now, Nechama Leibowitz says the following. V'lo nuchal lekabel klal ma'ashepidah sharashbam, diver ha'maschil v'yashleich miyadah. The point that she wants to make is that she cannot, under any circumstances, accept the pshat of the Rashbam. The Rashbam was an enikel of Rashi, and the Rashbam's approach in his commentary on Torah is pshat. Pshat. What does he say? These are the words of the Rashbam. Kishiroa te'egel, when he saw the egel, he saw the golden calf, Toshash kocho, he became weak. He pushed, became weak. He was so weakened by the ugly scene that he saw Jews dancing around the calf. V'lo hayobo koach lahashlicham rachok mimenu k'tzat. He didn't have the koach to throw it too far, but he has to make sure that it's not going to, he doesn't want them to fall on his feet. Shelo yazik es raglov benoflam, they should not hurt his feet when they fall. Kederech kol mashlichei masa, like all those who cast down. If you're carrying something and you can't carry it, so you have to make sure at least that it's not going to fall on you. Kishen ben koach loseit, when they don't have the koach to carry it anymore. V'chein ra'iti v'perokim shel Rabbi Eliezer v'ikar pshuto kach. So I saw in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, and the Rashbam says That's the real pshat. The real pshat is that this, the Rashbam is saying, this was not a calculated act of breaking it. They fell. They fell. He couldn't hold them anymore. They fell. You never thought of that. They fell. Ah, so why does he get a compliment from Hashem? So you're going to see, we're going to prove that there are two approaches. Rashi takes one approach, and his Einikel, the Rashbam, is going to take another approach. And that the position of his Einikel is the one that I'm going to defend. I have to be a little bit contrary, but it means, therefore, that you have to, you're going to have to begin to think in different categories, but we're going to make it easier for you. Don't worry. Yibashit couldn't carry it. He became weak. He had a chusha. A chusha overcame him, and all that he was succeeded in doing was that just push it a little further away from him so that it shouldn't fall on his feet. Nechama Leibowitz says, this is a pshat that we cannot accept. V'chein, he says, in Parshas Devarim, Rashbam is going to say it again very briefly. We learned the Pesukim in Devarim, for Ashabrein, that Pasuk, and I shattered it, I broke it. Kilo Atzarti Koach, the Rashbam says, I simply didn't have the strength. Kimosha Pirashti B'Parshat Kitisa, as I explained in Parshat Kitisa. Says Nechama, V'nid alone, which seems to us, Sheharashbam, HaNechshav Le'achad Migdolei HaPashtanim, the Rashbam, who is considered one of the great people of Pshat, meaning of the text, Hitrachei Kan Miod, Mipshuta Shel Mikra, has distanced himself so far from Pshuta Shel Mikra. By the way, this comment that she makes is a very good comment. If you're looking at Pshuto Shel Mikra, the simple meaning of the text, you know what it sounds like? Simple meaning of the text is, he was angry, he grabbed hold of them, and he shattered them. And here is Rashbam, the man of Pshat, who says, no. What the Pasuk seems to indicate is not so. It's not that he broke it, they fell. So she says that here's the man who claims that his approach is Pshat, and he's just gone too far. Ha'im rotza ha'kosov l'harotenu kan et chushato ha'fizit shel Moshe? Does the Pasuk want to tell us Moshe's physical weakness? Ha'im zehu ha'nemer ba'pasuk? Is this what the Pasuk is saying? She'nishmetu ha'luchot mi'adav? That the luchot slipped out of his hands? Nida, it would seem that the real description of what happened there is exactly what Moshe himself says in Devarim. Nida, shedaska ha'tiur shel shvirat ha'luchot b'sefer Devarim soter l'chalutin et dvarav. Moshe Rabbeinu's own description of what happened, it contradicts the words of the Rashbam. And there she takes that pasuk, v'et pos b'shnei ha'luchot, I grabbed onto the two luchot, v'ashlichem al shtei yadai, and I cast them down from my two hands, v'ashabrein le'inechem, and I broke them before your eyes. That was the pasuk, how he describes it in Devarim. So she says, take a look at that. It's a small pasuk, and there are three verbs, and there are three powerful verbs, v'et pos, I grabbed hold of, v'ashlichem, and I cast them down, v'ashabrein, and I broke them. Does that sound like weakness? Does that sound like somebody who can't hold on to the luchos? This is what it sounds like. So what is the Rashbam talking about? So since, of course, what can I do? I can't help it. I grew up in America. And because I grew up in America, I always go for the underdog, you understand? After such an attack on the Rashbam, and it would seem that there simply is no way to understand the Rashbam, one has to come to the defense of the Rashbam. So I'll tell you how I come to the defense of the Rashbam. First of all, we're going to talk about this pasuk. Pasuk we just had, three verbs. V'et pos, I grabbed onto the tuluchot. V'ashlichem, For the moment, I'm going to translate it as, I cast it down, v'ashabrein le'inechem, and I broke them before your eyes. Three powerful verbs that seem to indicate a conscious act, and a conscious act that was carried out with great strength. We're not talking about somebody simply weak and can't hold on to it. I'm trying to hold on to the luchos and I can't. It doesn't sound like that. So first of all, let's take each one of these words singly. Vo'etpos. How is the word vo'etpos used in Tanakh and in Chazal and by little children? What game do little children play? Hide and seek? How do they call it in Hebrew? Tofeset? Isn't it? Did I make up a name? Chavi. Tofeset? What's Tofeset? Tofeset is, I have to catch you. You're running away, and I'm going after you to try and catch you. The wife of Potiphar attempts the great seduction of Yosef. And Yosef, in an act of greatness and will, runs out of the room. Vatispisehu bevigdo. She grabbed him by his garment. And he ran out and left the garment in her hand. What does that mean? You know what the word tispisehu means? It's something that's, I'm losing my grip on it. I can't hold on to it. And it's only, find that. I grabbed it. But it's something that I'm losing my grip. What's the famous statement that is said in the Gemara? Tofasta meruba lo tofasta. If you want to grab a great deal or hold a great deal in your hand, you're not going to be able to do it. You just won't be able to do it. It's not going to succeed. So the word litfos always is talking about something that you can't really hold on to and you're having a great deal of difficulty. Is the pasuk beginning to change a little bit? Is the pasuk changing? Is it so wild that he simply can't hold on to the luchos? He can't hold on to the luchos. And then, about the word va'ashlichem. I had once said this, and I also asked Mechila of one of the people in Tanakh, and I'll explain exactly what I mean. When I was studying this Nechama early that morning, I think it was around Purim time, I was learning Masech Megillah. Take a look at number 8. The Gemara there says, Sheva Neviyotein. There are 7 prophetesses. Maninhu. Who are the 7 prophetesses? So here you might as well know, you know. Anybody ask you who the 7 prophetesses are? It's Sora, Miriam, Devorah, Chana, Abigail, Chulda, and Esther. It's worthwhile. You should go over and you should know who the 7 prophetesses are. And then the Gemara is going to explain, how do we know about each one of them that they were prophetesses? Okay. So now, if you take a look 3 lines down, it says, Miriam. How do we know that Miriam was a prophetess? Dichtiv, because it says, Vatikach Miriam ha-nevia achot Aharon. After Moshe and the Jewish people finished singing, Oz Yoshes, it says, Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the cymbals and she and the women began to sing, Oshidol Hashem ki go'oga. So they call her Nevia. But what's fascinating is, why do they only describe her as Achot Aaron, as the sister of Aaron? Why don't they Achos Aaron u'Moshe, please? V'lo Achot Moshe, the Gemara says. She's not the sister of Moshe. Omar Rav, Shehoysom mitnabeit kishehi Achot Aaron. You know why she's called the sister of Aaron? Because when she was the sister of Aaron, before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, she prophesied that her mother was going to give birth to the Savior and Redeemer of the Jewish people. She prophesied when she was the sister of Aaron and saying, Atida imi shatele ben sheyoshiach Yisrael. My mother is going to give birth to a child, a son, that's going to save the Jewish people.
Ubshosha Nolad, and when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Nitmale Kol Habayit Kulo Oro, the whole house became full of light. Omad Aviyah, her father, Amram got up, Noshka Al Rosha, he kissed her on her head, and he said to her, Biti, my daughter, Nitkaiman Nivuatech, your prophecy has been fulfilled. Now watch the next few words. When I saw the next few words, wow, what an impact it had on me. The Kivan Shehishlichu Layor. How are we going to translate this? When they threw Moshe into the river? Do you think they threw Moshe into the river? They obviously placed him gently in a basket in the river. They didn't throw him in. And look at the term that's used by the Gemara. The kivon shehishlichu layor, they threw him. How do you like that? You say it came so natural to me. No, when they placed him gently into the river, Omad Aviyah, her father got up with tofcha al rosha, and he hit her on the head, and he said to her, "Biti, my daughter, heicha nevuatech? Where is your prophecy?" Haynu d'chtiv. That's why he says, "Vateitasav achoto meirachok." His sister stood from afar, ladat. To know, she has to watch this, she has to see what's going to happen, because she was so sure that her prophecy was going to be fulfilled. And of course she was right. Does the word vo'ashlichehu therefore have to mean you throw it down? Who do I have to ask Mechila from? I have to ask Mechila from Hagar. When Avram, because Sarah tells him, get rid. She goes out and he puts Yishmael on her shoulder. He gives her a canteen of water and a loaf of bread. And she goes out and she's lost in the desert. There's no longer any water left. So it says she took the child, batashlichehu, and she tashlichehu'd in him, tachad achat hasichim, asher bamidbar, under one of the one of the bushes that was out in the desert. So I remember in the early years of my rabbinate, I said that's the difference between a Yiddish mama and a Goyish mama. A Yiddish mama, you understand, takes a child who's going to die. She can't watch, so she goes, sits far away so she shouldn't see the child dying. And what does she do? Then she throws him down like a rag down onto the. So that was a pretty good drush. It went over very well. A Yiddish mama under such circumstances obviously would hold that child close to her until the very last moment. But to abandon a crying child. So I have to ask Mechila from Hagar. But Tashlichehu does not necessarily mean that she took Yishmael and just threw him down on the ground. Maybe she should have. But alright, she didn't do that. But Tashlichehu means that she placed him down gently. Just as it says in the Pasuk, in the Gemara, the Kivan Shehishlichuhu LaYaor. And you should know, in the etymology of the word, it occurred to me the following. There's a word in Tanakh that comes from this word. What do you call the trees when they leave in autumn? The shalechet. The shalechet are the leaves as they come off the tree. Do the leaves come off the tree and are cast down on the ground, or do the leaves gently make their way down onto the ground? Wait a minute. Number one. So meanwhile, I think already we're beginning to read the pasuk a little bit differently than it seemed at first. V'et post b'shnei haluchot means I'm trying. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying for dear life, I'm trying to hold on to the luchot, but I couldn't. So v'ashlichem, I let it fall. It dropped. Me'al shtei yadayim. So how does he say, I broke them before your very eyes? You know why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was a leader. What's Moshe Rabbeinu going to tell the Jewish people? I couldn't help it, I'm really sorry. Start giving all sorts of excuses. A leader of Klal Yisrael that's bringing the Luchos from the Rebbeinu Shlom has to take responsibility. If he couldn't hold on to it and it dropped from his hands, he's responsible. And therefore he, as a man, as a leader, a person who's able to take responsibility, says, I did it. I'm not blaming anybody else. What should I say? I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. I got a pain in my arm, my arthritis, my back, or something. I couldn't. No. He takes responsibility. Does the pasuk now begin to sound a little bit more like the Rashbam? Now I'm going to give you the proof. And I haven't seen anybody say this. The truth is, I'm not looking too hard. I don't want to find anybody else who said it. And you should know, Torah is so magnificent. It tells stories in such unusual ways. Follow me on a journey right now. In number two, we're going back to number two. Vayifam vayeded Moshe men ahar, the beginning. Vayifam vayeded Moshe men ahar. Moshe turned and he went down from the mountain. Ushnei luchot ha'edut. And the two luchot are biyado. Please tell me, what does that mean? One hand, singular. Alright? Wait a minute. Now let's go to the next paragraph. We're going to skip the crucial pasuk. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Lamed Dalet. And God said to Moshe, Psolocho Shnei Luchot Avanim Karoshonim. God tells him, you should hew unto yourself another two Luchot, and I'm going to write on these Luchot what were on the original Luchot that you broke, Asheshi Barto. Veheyena Cholaboke, be prepared in the morning. Alita Vaboke Har Sinai, go up to in the morning to Mount Sinai. Venitzavta Shom Arosh Ahor, and stand on the top of the mountain. Veishlo Yaleimach, Vigam Yishayedo Bechol Hahor, Gamatzon Vabokar Al Yirol Mulhorahu. Nobody should be there. No sheep, no cattle. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes up in the early morning to bring the second set of Luchot, and the second set of Luchot were hewn and cut by him, and he's going to take them up to the top of the mountain so that God should write into the second Luchot what was in the first. Vayifsol Shnei Luchot Avanim Kirishonim. Pasuk says that he hewed, he cut two Luchot Avanim Kirishonim. Vayashke Moshe Raboke. Moshe got up in the morning. Vayal al Har Sinai Kasher Tzivah Hashem Oto. He went up to Mount Sinai as God commanded him. Vayikach Biyado. In his hand, he took Shnei Luchot Avanim. We're going to see, I found that the Rav asks, or Soloveitchik asks, what a paradox. Where is it easier to hold on to something? When you're going down, or you're going up? Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down from the mountain. It seems he can't hold on to the Luchos. And we're going to see right away what it means. And when he's going up in the morning, and the Luchot are complete, nothing's been chiseled out, he goes up over there with, he's holding them both in one hand. For that matter, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Moshe Rabbeinu can hold it with a pinky finger as he goes up the mountain. Now, let's take a look in Parshat Ekev. In that great pasuk, V'eifen v'eided ben ahar, I turned and I went down from the mountain, number three, and the mountain is burning in fire. Ushnei luchot habrit, he's coming down, and this is how he describes himself in Devarim. This is how he describes how he feels as he's coming down. Ushnei luchot habrit, and the two tablets, al shtei yodai, on my two hands. Do you understand? He's coming down after he has been told that Jews have made an egel, and they're getting heavy. What he was able later to use one hand to carry up the mountain, he's having difficulty carrying with two hands as he comes down. And then the pasuk that Nechama used, where post b'shnei haluchot v'ashlichem me'al what? Shtei yodai, my two hands. And the next half, v'etahi, then God said, the last pasuk over there, when he goes up the second time, I went up to the mountain. The two luchot are in my hand.
You want to know what the seek over here is? You want to know what's happening? So the one who lets us in on it really is the Malbim. And the fact it comes from the Yalkut Shimoni and it comes from another few Midrashim. Number six, you see the Malbim? You can go to line four. 1, 2, 3. Vayichar af Moshe. Pasuk 19, the swing pasuk. Vayichar af Moshe. Moshe got angry. Vayashlech miyadav et haluchot. Vechazal amru. Our rabbi said. And here the Malbim is also a great promoter of pshat. And here he has to bring the words of our rabbis. Sheporchu ha'otiyot be'et shekarav al ha'egel. As Moshe is coming toward the Egel, you know what happens? He sees the letters flying out of the Luchot. Flying out of the Luchot. Valkain, Nasu Kvedim, that's why they became heavy. V'hutzrach lahachzik otam b'shtei yadav. Now he has to hold on to them with two hands. Ki holach mehem haneshama. Because when the letters fly out of the luchot, the neshama that gives them life has left them. Haneshama hanoseit otam, the neshama that carries them. Baal ken shivram, that's why he broke them. Acha shecholfa hakedusha mehem, after the sanctity was gone. See, because there's another more important question over here. What do you mean two hands? Did the Kohanim have to carry the Aron? The Gemara says, Aron nose es nosav. The Aron carries those who carry it. There was no such thing as the Kohanim are carrying the Aron like, oh God, they need to have another glass of Me'ed, and now it's so hot and so heavy schlepping this Aron. Ha'Aron nose et nosav. Why does the Aron carry those who carry it? Because it has the luchos in it. That's the neshama. When the Kohanim and the Aron crossed the Yarden in the days of Yoshua, it says that they flew over the Yarden. Who was the power that motivated this Aron? The Luchos. But Chazal say that the Luchos, the Osios, the letters started flying out of the Luchos. The Kedusha is gone. Do you know what we accomplish with this? What we accomplish with this, first of all, is the Rebbeinu Shlomo sent Moshe Rabbeinu down with luchos that bring a message. What happens to luchos if the letters have flown out? You know what they become? Two things. Plain stone. Valueless. Valueless. Means nothing. We asked at the beginning, according to those who hold it, Moshe Rabbeinu broke them. Who gave him the right to break them? They're not his. You know why he could break them if he wanted to break them? Because this is not what God gave him. God gave him luchos that had a neshama in them. The neshama is gone. It's dead. You know what it is? It's nothing more than a stain. And you know when it's a stain? It's a heavy one. As he starts coming down the mountain and the letters start flying out, it's no longer the luchos that carry Klal Yisrael throughout history. Stone, and it's heavy stone, and he can't hold it. That's the Rashbam is saying. The Rashbam is saying that he didn't break them. He was holding on for dear life, and all that he was able to accomplish was just to make sure that they don't fall on his feet and hurt him, because they're not luchos anymore. It's all gone. It's all gone. He doesn't say it, but I'm saying that that's clearly what he means, especially since he quotes Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. He says, V'chein ra'isi b'drakim shel Rabbi Eliezer. The Medrash, one of the places where the Medrash appears, that the Otiot flew out, that was Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Oh, now the Rashbam, and we have the Malbim behind the Rashbam. Now we're talking about the but serious reason to take a look at it all in a completely different light.
Now comes the coup de grace. Now comes the great addition that I make over here. The crucial pasuk number 7. Vayehi kasher karav al hamachaneh, and it came to pass when he came close to the camp, vayad et ha'egel u'mecholot, he saw the egel and the dancing around it. Vayicharaf Moshe. Moshe got angry. Vayashleich miyado. Oh, do you see what's happening over here? It's read one way, but it's spelled another way. It's spelled in the singular, but it's read in the plural, miyadav. Because this is the crucial moment. This is the moment already at which he can no longer carry it with one hand. He has to do it with two. And he can't even hold on to it with two. In every other place where Torah talks about it, he's either holding the two luchot in one hand, or he's holding the two luchot in two hands. The swing pasuk, the crucial moment, the moment in which he sees, stands and he sees it. You know what the Torah wants to point out? With that one word, the way it's written and it's spelled, that something has happened now. He no longer can hold it with one hand. That's why we read it, yadav. It's written, yadav. He was holding it in one hand. He can't anymore. It has to be two hands. The osios are flying out. The neshama is going. They were carrying him till now. The luchos were carrying him. And now he can't even carry the luchos anymore. Because they're not luchos. They're stone. Valueless. Nothing to them. And at this point in time, even if he would have chosen to break them, he would have been permitted to do so because it has no value. It doesn't belong to anybody. There's nothing there. But the fact is, according to that medrash, and a number of medrashim that say it, Hashash Kocho is the words of the Rashbam. He became weak. He became weak and he couldn't carry it anymore. So the Rav, when I found this, the fact is that he speaks about the luchos a number of times he talks about the luchos. And when I found this one, he brings the medrash that says that the otiyot began to fly out of the luchot. Began to fly out. Then he says, he asks the great paradox. The great paradox is, Moshe coming down from the mountain can't hold it in two hands. Moshe going up the mountain with the second set of luchot is able to, in fact, that gray morning when nobody is around and he's going up for the second time, he dances up the mountain with the luchos in one hand. He could be dancing up the mountain, as I say, with the luchos on his key finger. And the Rav, in classic, brisker approach, says the following. Men in this world can be a gavra. A gavra meaning a man with purpose, with determination, with an objective, and with a goal. One who's ready to fight all the forces that may stand up against him. And then there's man who permits himself, or so it happens that he becomes a chefzi, he becomes an object. He's beaten by the vicissitudes of time. All the events around him begin to impact on him in such a way he can't fight back. He's weak. His life becomes fate, not destiny. So the Rav says that when Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down the mountain and the otiyot are flying out from the luchot, Moshe Rabbeinu no longer has, there's no goal, there's no objective. He had gone up the mountain in order to bring Torah for the first time to the Jewish people. But it's not to be. What is he? There's no purpose left. There's nothing for him to do. The weight of the whole world becomes heavy upon him and he can't carry it. Let alone carry the luchos that have lost all of their sanctity and all of their neshama. But when Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 days later, goes up for the second time in order to receive the luchos, dark morning, fire on the mountain, there isn't a soul there. But you know what? Moshe Rabbeinu has a great goal and objective. He's going to bring Torah to the Jewish people. A person with purpose, with goal, with objective. Moshe Rabbeinu can carry the whole world in his hands as he goes up that mountain. Of course he goes up with the mountain holding it in one hand. Because here is a man who's a gavra. He's not an object. When he comes down the mountain, he's an object. He's lost. He's lost. All purpose. All, nothing. Nothing. There's nothing to do. But when he goes up the second time, it's a whole different Moshe Rabbeinu. Completely different Moshe Rabbeinu. All of this, of course, is based on the approach of the Medrash. The approach of the Medrash, which clearly is what the Rashbam holds. Clearly it's what the Malbim says it. Without doubt, the Malbim says it. I'm not saying that this is the only pshat. All that I wanted to do was to come to the defense of the Rashbam from an onslaught by Nechama Leibowitz. I mean, it was a real onslaught. As though the Rashbam didn't read a pasuk, v'et pos b'shnei haluchot, v'ashlichem y'al shtei yadai, the three verbs in the pasuk that leaves the impression as though this had to be a conscious act of Moshe Rabbeinu. Didn't have to be at all. You can read the pasuk in a completely different way. By the way, that's the beauty of Torah. That's the beauty of Torah. And here's a classic example of Eilu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Because I remember in another shiur, I never saw it written, but I remember hearing it, where I think the Rav spoke about that last Rashi in Chumash. Why does God tell him, Moshe Rabbeinu, thank you, you did the great thing by breaking. What's the great Yashikayach? What was he afraid of? What was he afraid of? You know what he was afraid of? Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that he would come down the mountain to a people dancing around the golden calf with the Luchot. So what do you think they're going to do? You think they're going to say, we don't want your Luchot. No, that's not what we're going to say. That's not what they're going to say. You know what they're going to do? Oh, Moshe, they're going to dance with the Luchot and with the Ego. Yep. I mean, it always comes, whenever I think of that Rashi, what comes to mind is a Jewish house of worship in Toronto, right near the 401 highway, where you see two big Luchot that rise above the highway from the top of this temple. The fact is, there are no letters inside, because the fact is, those luchot are absolutely empty. There's no Yiddishkeit in the building below. There's no Shabbos, there's nothing. But you know what? You can reject everything that's in the luchot and put it there at the top of your temple. There it is. They can jump around and dance around with the Egel, and you know what they would be doing? They'll take the luchos with them, and they will empty the luchos of all of their meaning. You can have them both. You can destroy Shabbos. You can say Kashrus is meaningless. You can say Gittin and Kedushin is nothing. You can say that patrilineal lineage. You can do kol davar also that's destructive of Judaism, and still have the luchot rising there into the sky above the temple. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of. That's according to Rashi, who says that it was a conscious act of his. Because what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing, he was saving Torah. It was the salvation of Torah by his shattering the luchos. But the Rashbam and the Malbim were taking the approach that no, there's no Kedusha anymore. It's all gone. It's all gone. Maybe one other thought that the Rav develops, and it's very important. There was a difference between, a qualitative difference between the first set of luchos and the second set of luchos. The difference in the second set of luchos is because God says to him, and we have it both in Kitisa and we have it in Parshat Ekev, God says to him, Psol Lecha, you and cut the rocks. In the course of the first luchot, Moshe Rabbeinu was passive, and the one who was active was God. Who made the luchot? It was all the work of God. The second luchot, God says to him, Psol Lecha, you prepare the luchos. You cut them. You shape them. You form them. And then you bring them up. Which means that in the second set of luchos, Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer passive. Moshe Rabbeinu becomes an active participant in creating the Luchot. It's one of the things that the Rav always says, that just as God is a creator, so man has to be a creator. Man has to be active. Man has to be active. The moment that Moshe Rabbeinu creates and forms and fashions and forges those luchos by himself, that means he becomes now a participant in establishing Torah by the Jewish people. And that he takes it much further to the idea that everything of value has got to be the result of pain. No pain, no gain. No effort, no energy expended, then there's going to be very, very little in return. There's the idea of sacrifice, the idea that I put in effort, I put in energy, and that's the way in which we acquire Torah. Torah is not acquired by sitting back. Torah can only be acquired by being an active participant in building Torah, in making Torah, in studying Torah. It's always self-sacrifice. That self-sacrifice is represented by Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the one that's working, and he's chiseling the stones, and he's preparing it. And the Gemara says that the covenant that was entered into between God and the Jewish people was through the second set of luchos, the second set of tablets. Because in that second set of tablets, there was already the effort of Moshe Rabbeinu. There was the self-sacrifice that was involved. Similar to a Gemara that part of the Gemara. The Gemara says that there are Sholosh Matanas Tovas, there are three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people. The Chulan Lo Nitnu El Al Yedei Yisuchim, they were only given through suffering. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. There's no such thing as acquiring great things without expending great effort. Moshe Rabbeinu establishes the principle that Torah is acquired through hard work, through being ready to give things up for it. He does that by the fact that he fashions the second set of luchos. And once there's a goal and an objective and a purpose, Moshe Rabbeinu on that morning is able to climb the highest mountain carrying the heaviest burden. And he does it with one hand. He doesn't need more than one hand. Shabbos in the morning, what are we saying in Shemona Esrei? Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko ki even nemon karosolo klil tefedes b'roshu nosatolo bondo lufanecha al har sinai ushnei luchot avanim biyado. The two luchot avanim were in his hand. Anshe Knesset Agadola, who wrote and composed the Shemona Esrei, knew exactly what they were talking about. The only time he needs two hands is when he's coming down from the mountain. And the crucial moment at which he can no longer hold it with one hand, and it has to be two, is when Vayar, when he sees us, Egel v'hamacholos, and how beautifully the Torah shows it to us by that one word, Yado, written Yado, and read Yado. Then it's all over. But when he's going to go up the mountain again, and he's going to prepare the luchos himself, he's going to be able to do it without prayer. Okay, that's it. I thought so. So you asked a good kasha, so give a good answer. Because Torah is only as good as the Jewish people. That's established right on the spot, right there. If there's no people, there's no Torah. That's true. But the luchos that are supposed to be given to them, it's not the Torah that's being destroyed. We're talking about the luchos that are supposed to be given to them. If they're unworthy of it, all over. That's precisely what you learn from them. We have to be worthy in order to receive them. You said it was only nitpicking, so. What? No, it can't. Simply because of the fact that we see different places. Two hands, one hand. Two hands, one hand. What's the Torah doing? Playing games? Or is the Torah being very precise? No.
Biado.
Yes. And here. Here in Parshas Ekev. That's what Moshe is speaking about, coming down. But when he goes up the mountain, he says he went up holding it in one hand. In other words, it can't simply be haphazard or just if you don't. My hand. Look, because he changes it from. So it has, that's right. So he has to, it's clear that it has to be.
Perhaps the expression which you know very well is, Ayid on Abud, or Abud on Ayid.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Rabbi,
yes.
The first ten commandments, the second are identical, or is that first commandment?
Well, all you have to do is take a look in Torah, in Parshat Yitro, and then in Parshat Vachanan, and you will see that there are some differences between the first and the second. But we have the text of both, and it's a matter of great study, all of the various differences. Well, take a look, you'll see in Torah, in Parshas Yisrael. There are differences. In one of the Ten Commandments, it says in the first one, it says you should keep Shabbos so you should remember that I took you out of Egypt. In the second, it says you should keep Shabbos so you should know that I created heaven and earth. Okay, that's one of the many differences.
Very, because when I have quoted that,
you're not wrong. You come here, we'll make sure you're right.